is the Cloud Enough Podcast, your launchpad for Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud Enough Podcast. We are your hosts, Andreas and
Michael Wittig. We have been building on AWS since 2009, and here in this podcast, you can follow along as we develop products like Bucket-V, Attachment-V, Marbot, and also Hyper-Env. This is episode number 94, and we are recording this on July the 24th in 2025. And in case you're watching this live on YouTube or LinkedIn, feel free to ask questions in the chat. We will have a look at them, and we either answer them directly or at the end of the show. So, Andreas, you already mentioned that before we started here that we kind of are experimenting a little bit with rearranging or kind of changing the format of the podcast. So basically what we're going to do based on feedback that we received when we talk to people mostly on conferences is that they are kind of interested in what we are doing and also what works and what doesn't work. And then also, of course, what we figured out around AWS topics. So that's why we kind of restructured the podcast a little bit. And we always will start now with a quick report on what was going on since last time we created a podcast. And this time, this is actually 4 months, or I think 3 months ago. So there are quite a couple of things that happened. So for example, I worked on our flagship product, Bucket-V, and which is the antivirus solution for Amazon S3. And up until a couple of weeks ago, you could choose your engine. You could either use the Sophos engine, which is a commercial engine, or you could use the ClaimAV engine, which is the open source engine. And what I basically created in the last couple of weeks is a way to use both engines. So now you can scan each file with both engines, and then we kind of merge the result of each of those engines into one final result. So far, this basically works this way, that if one of the engines thinks that a file is infected, we say the file is infected. And if both think the file is clean, then the file is clean. Basically, what we are thinking about doing in the future is maybe we should add a third engine, then we can have a quorum route. So if two or three engines think it's infected, then it probably is infected, and strategies like that. But for now, this is how it works, and we already have the first customers using it, and we're kind of experimenting a little bit with it, and then we see how we can evolve it. So Andreas, what was on your plate?
So Michael, I have a question on that, so maybe you can explain that in more detail. So maybe a recap. So Bucket-V has a very simple architecture. It's basically an SQS queue where the scan jobs go in. Mm-hmm. Then there's a fleet of EC2 instance downloading data from S3, scanning the data, and then reporting the result back to an SNS topic. Mm-hmm. Maybe can you explain a little bit? So basically now we have two of those systems running in parallel, mm-hmm. but how do you make sure that the jobs go to both queues and then you combine the results? Maybe you can just quickly give an overview of the architecture behind that.
So the multi-engine scanning, basically we had multiple approaches that we discussed, and one approach was to execute all the scans on a single EC2 instance, which basically means we have multiple engines running on the same instance. And the other approach was that we keep everything as it is. We have a fleet of EC2 instances for the ClaimAV scanning, we have a fleet for the Sophos scanning, and then we basically just, when a file arrives in our SQS queue, we fan it out to two queues, like one for ClaimAV and one for Sophos, and at the end we listen to the SNS topics of each engine and then combine the results by storing it in DynamoDB. And once we see two results, we kind of push the final scan result out onto the main SNS topic. And that's basically what I did in the end. So the approach was to have two independent installations. And if you look under the hood, this is actually implemented by a CloudFormation stack that deploys nested stacks. So one nested stack for ClaimAV, one nested stack for Sophos. This uses the exact same technology and stack template that we use for the main ClaimAV or main Sophos product. So we basically have a wrapper around our two products, and this wrapper creates the multi-engine result by fanning out to the SQS queues of both engines and then fanning in on the SNS topics, and both, like the fan in and the fan out, is implemented in a Lambda function, which is Quite convenient in this case. And that's it, Andreas. Does this answer your question?
Yeah, so does that mean that to fan in, so basically to combine the results, you have two Lambda functions listening for the scan results over SNS, and then as soon as you receive a result, you keep the state in a DynamoDB table to make sure you're matching those two together.
That's correct. So I basically store the first result, and then I check, okay, there's only one result available, so I just keep it as it, and then when the second request, scan results arrives, it also updates the same DynamoDB item and sees, okay, there's already a scan result in there. I can now run my logic to kind of merge the scan results.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a single DynamoDB item. There's one attribute for the claim AV scan result, one attribute for the Sophos scan result. So that's very simple and straightforward implementation. So I run an update on the item and I get back the result, and I just look at it in the code, and then I do something if I have two results, and otherwise I just do nothing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, perfect. Okay. So yeah, let me proceed. So what I've been working on in the past few weeks was building SDKs for the attachment AV API. So the attachment AV API is basically a product variant of Bucket AV. So we from history, we added an API to Bucket AV to allow developers to scan or send scan results over an REST API. And then we build a product out of that, which we now call attachment AV API. And to make it easier for developers to use the API and to increase discoverability of our API, we basically wanted to build SDKs for popular programming languages, and that's what I've been working on. I'll go into the technical details at the end of this podcast, because I want to discuss a blog post that I've written about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I checked already is, so being listed in NPM and the NPM registry, in the Python registry, in the Java Maven Central registry, so this, I can already see that we get basically traffic from those sources, because developers find our solution by searching through packages in those repositories. So I think it has basically two benefits. It makes it easier to consume the API for developers, and it also should help us marketing our product. So I'm looking forward to see where this is going. So yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, and this is also like another activity that we kind of had ongoing, was that we working a little bit on, you can call it marketing or, I don't know, sales strategy. So basically one opportunity that we have not used at all until recently is that we have a couple of products now, and they are all kind of similar because they're in the security space. For example, Bucket AV, Attachment AV, it's all about scanning files for malware. And we also have different like variants of the product. For example, Bucket AV, we have the Claim AV version, we have the Sophos version, also we have the multi-engine version now. So one very basic idea that probably everyone thinks of is, okay, how can we present our customers that use, for example, the Claim AV engine, the benefits of using the Sophos engine in our product, and then maybe some of them will upgrade to the Sophos offering. And same for customers running on Sophos, and they might want to upgrade on the multi-engine. And this is kind of now embedded in the product. And if you're running the Claim AV product, you will see a very small notice in the dashboard that you might want to upgrade to the Sophos engine. And if you're on the Sophos engine, you see the same kind of thing for the multi-engine upgrade path. And we have documented this on our website, or how the upgrade goes, and it's really straightforward. There's no interruption, no downtime, things like that. But just making customers aware of the option that it exists actually might help already for making our customers choose the right engine. And we have kind of the same thing within Attachment AV, where we have Salesforce customers, we have Atlassian customers, we have WordPress customers, and okay, what other products of our suite they might be interested in. So we now have similar embeddings in the product that kind of make customers aware of our additional offerings. Besides that, we have a newsletter for both products, and we also in the newsletter now always include kind of a little box where we just present a product that might be of interest to you as well. And we will see how it goes. We don't have any data there yet. It always takes, at least for the size of our business, we learned that it takes months before we see anything changing. So, I mean, if you see in a newsletter today that there's the Sophos engine, very few customers will instantly click upgrade and then just do it, because most of them have to schedule it. They have to talk to their boss, for example, or make room in their backlog and stuff like that. So it's something that takes time. But yeah, I think we're on a good path now, Andreas.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the challenging thing for the two of us is that we would love to put all our energy into developing new features or new product ideas, and sometimes hard to focus on marketing activities instead. So I think that with this new, let's call it a marketing strategy, a very simple one, at least we have now, I think we are on a pretty good path to make sure that we are dedicating some of our time to marketing activities as well.
Yeah,
so that should help a lot.
We also have this label in our Trello board now for marketing activities, so that we at least see at the end of the week, okay, have you done anything in that space?
Yeah.
We should start with that next week at Monday to make sure that it's kind of done, and then work on the rest of it there.
Yeah, and basically as a follow-up from our discussion about marketing, we also revisited what should we do with cloud or not. So in the past, we have put a lot of energy into building a lot of content, so a lot of blog posts, podcasts, YouTube videos, and so on. And it felt so not doing that anymore in the past months, it just doesn't feel right. And so we decided, how can we basically come back to Cloud on Out and put out content? And the idea was, or our new idea is basically, how can we create content based on what we learn from our day-to-day work? Because in the past, at the beginning of Cloud on Out, we have been writing books about AWS. We have been doing a lot of consulting work. So we had a lot of input that we could easily share in blog posts and stuff. And now as we work on a bunch of products, it's a little different, I think. So doing reviews of new AWS services, stuff like that, is not that easy for us anymore, because we don't have time in our day-to-day work to go in those details and work on the same stuff, basically. So what we thought is, how can we share content from what we learned during developing our products on AWS? And that's what we want to focus on in this podcast, but also in our blog, and maybe even videos again. So I think this could be a good strategy. And we already put out two blog posts this month, so it seems like this approach might be working. Yeah, let's see how this turns out. But I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's right. And let's see how it goes. But I have at least a couple of blog posts actually in my mind, Andrea. So I have some config cost reduction stuff that I just completed this week, where we can very easily reduce your config bill in a massive way, without, at least from my experience, losing a lot of information. So it's kind of a good trade-off, I think. So that could be a good blog post that is kind of in the works, kind of. So yeah, maybe I can finish that tomorrow. So okay, so what is it, the next kind of thing we're going to talk about? So this is new for me, Andreas, so we usually don't talk about that. This is about things that went well and things that didn't went so well over the last couple of weeks, right?
And it's more from the business perspective.
Yeah.
So running a business as a two-person company, selling products mainly in the marketplace on AWS and others. So we thought about sharing a little insights into what's going on the business side. Yeah.
And this is also like, we usually don't share numbers. And this is also this is really, how would I say it? It is kind of a cultural thing. So in Germany, you basically don't tell your neighbor how much you earn. So it's not something that you're going to do. And it's different in other cultures, where you kind of celebrate the million MRR and million, I don't know what. So yeah, we will try how comfortable that feels for us, and we are starting with relative numbers.
We're starting slow. Right? So. We're starting slow. Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that was really a big deal for us was that we closed a deal and started onboarding a new important government customer from the European Union for our Salesforce Attachment EV product, which is great because it really is a different customer base. So our Salesforce product has a completely different customer base compared to all our other products. They're really enterprise heavy in their sales process. So they don't just buy our product. They always want to have a lot of calls up front. They do a lot of proof of concept stuff and things like that. So we are learning how to sell into that market at the moment. And this was one of our first major contracts that we actually got signed. And that's why it's such a big deal for us. So we think that we are getting better at it. And we are still not good at it. But yeah, there's at least some hope at the end.
Absolutely. Michael, my win is, so June was really a record month for us. So our revenue grew 80% year over year. So this was really something amazing to see. So of course you see ups and downs in a software as a service business like we, where we have metered billing, but this was really a great record and really cool to see the business growing like that.
That's right. So something else that I achieved, which I actually didn't achieve for quite a long time, I was actually reading a book, Andreas, and it was a book that was that also you kind of shared with me, and it's called The SaaS Playbook, and it's by a guy called Rob Welling, and he's running the MicroConf, so that's probably the most popular thing that people might be know of, which is kind of a community for people like Andreas and me, like who run a business in a way that's not venture funded, but it's kind of bootstrapped. So we're trying to earn the money that we spend next month before we spend it, kind of. And yeah, this was a interesting book, and it had some. There are many ideas in books, and then you kind of forgot about most of them a couple of days later. But there are a couple of ideas that actually stuck. And you are also reading the book, Andreas, or finished it, I think, this week.
Yeah.
So, we will look a little bit into the metrics that were presented in the book. So he has a very unique way to look at a business from a high-level perspective. So what is churn? How do you measure it by number of customers or by the actually volume that you lose and things like that? Very interesting stuff. And yeah, we will look into how we can implement that in our dashboard.
Yeah. So Michael, then I want to share a fail. So we have shared a few wins, one of one fail. So I spent so much time basically to find out about how to do income tax or sales tax in India. So the problem is a little bit, so with our business, so we sell to customers worldwide, and the AWS marketplace, Atlassian, and Salesforce marketplace make it usually very easy to do so. But still, you have to deal with different legislation, tax legislations. And so it's sometimes really hard to understand what's required from you to do everything right. And so I was really struggling to fill out a tax form required by the Indian income tax authorities. And so AWS asked about it because we sell to customers through the marketplace in India. And it took me really hours and hours of reading and trying to fill out the form in an online document. So yeah, this was really, really crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I managed to do it. At least I'm on the right track. So there's one document missing now that I'm waiting for. But but still, I found out how to submit the form. So that's really good news. So if you are in the same situation, I'm now a little bit familiar with how India handles
paperwork needed to make this work. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also funny to see that there doesn't seem to be many tax advisors in Germany that can help in that situation. So
the problem is probably the big tax consulting firms probably know what's going on here, but we cannot afford them. So
that's right.
Yeah. The smaller tax consultant agencies don't know about it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I can also share one thing that is kind of a fail. So for a couple of months, I was looking at our dashboard that we deploy with BucketDB, and it has a couple of information in it, and one of it is the amount of data that was scanned and also the amount of data that was metered. So this is what we send to AWS Marketplace, which appears on your bill. And we run BucketDB in for AttachmentDB. So AttachmentDB basically is backed by BucketDB. So we run our own installation of BucketDB to kind of serve the AttachmentDB traffic. And I was looking at the dashboard a couple of times, and I always saw that there's a large, and sometimes it was 50 to 60% discrepancy between the number of data scanned, the volume of data scanned, and the volume that was metered, actually. So at some point in time, I just wanted to understand what's actually going on. And then we did some research, Andreas, and you helped with that by using CloudTrail, which logs the API call that we do to meter the usage on AWS Marketplace. And it turns out that we had, like, we have the opportunity to report the usage every hour in AWS Marketplace. And so if an instance, for example, meters and then shuts down within an hour, we are not able to meter the final call, or we're not able to make the final call. So that was basically the problem. And if you're running spot instances, and which basically means that instances are spin up and spinning down constantly, it happens a lot that instances kind of terminate before we actually meter the last volume that was scanned. And we fixed that, Andreas. So hopefully we will now see that the two metrics will kind of move more parallel than before. And we will see how that goes. But it could be that we actually sell or that we actually charge maybe 50% of what our customers actually are doing with our product, which would be really bad for us.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe it's just us that have very different patterns of workloads. I don't know if it is applicable to all our customers, but it's definitely not so good to discover that a couple of years, I think, after your product is available.
It happens to the best. I think it's happened to AWS from time to time that they notice that they're not charging for something.
Yeah. I mean, good thing for our customers that we were undercharging, that overcharging, so there's no harm for our customers.
Yeah,
for
that. I think that's the best thing that can happen. Okay. So Michael, I'd like now to jump to discuss two topics where we went a little bit deeper into AWS related topics, and we have written blog posts about both of them as well. So let me start. I already mentioned at the beginning that I was working on creating SDKs for our attachment AV API.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about how can I basically achieve that. So what we have is we have an API gateway, a good old REST API type. That's basically the front end for developers sending us HTTP requests to scan files. And so I was looking into ways how can I basically generate an SDK. So the first thing I tried was API gateway itself for REST APIs has a feature where you can just export an SDK basically out of the definition of your API gateway deployed on AWS. So I tried that at the beginning. The result was an SDK, but it was very, I would say adding very little benefit for developers because, it just one-to-one replicates the HTTP REST API. So there's no much convenience by using it. You have to was very difficult to configure your credential to access the API, stuff like that. The naming was very, not very simple to understand. So I looked into alternatives and I thought about, wait a minute, I think I remember something how AWS plans or is already generating their SDKs for all those languages that they have out there, which is really an astonishing number, Michael. So I looked into what is called Smithy. So this is a project by AWS where it basically has two parts. It has an interface definition language that they came up with, and then builders to generate SDKs in various languages. So that's called clients. They also can create server stubs based on the same definition. So this looked very promising, and I tried to get that up and running. So I think one the idea behind it is you define the interface, so it's not really defining not only defining the API, but it also has the client in mind. So I think that's the differentiator here. So I thought this was interesting, and it's definitely a very interesting approach. But what I discovered is the problem is all the builders to generate the Java SDK, the JavaScript SDK, and so on. Most of them are still in developer preview. And it turns out that generating the code was not working as expected. So I had problems with generating Java code that was not compiling, stuff like that. So it seems to be a very interesting approach, but it seems like the whole project is not yet ready for production usage, what they say themselves. So you should trust them in that. So this was a little a bummer. And then I went back after asking on LinkedIn and getting a few responses. I looked into the Open API generator. So basically, it's a very similar idea than the first one that I tried. You basically use your Open API document, so the specification of your API, and generate the SDK out of that. And this is a very well established open source project. I think they forked from Swagger some time ago, but it's under high development, many different generators for different programming languages and frameworks available. So I looked into that, and the first result was also not very impressive, because I used just the Open API document that we used to deploy our REST API on AWS. And again, I got very confusing SDK. So I had the idea, why not create a separate Open API document, really only for the reason to generate the SDK. You can strip out everything that is not needed. You can have names that are more user-friendly, easier to understand, all that stuff. And that's what I ended up with. And the results are, I think, quite good. So I think the SDKs really add value. They have an abstraction layer for developers on the API. So I think it's now much easier to use Attachment AV to send scan jobs. And I'm really happy to do that. I will put a link to the blog post with some code examples into the show notes.
All right. So I already posted the link, Andreas, to the chat at least. So there it is. Okay. So I will also share one thing that this was more like a new feature that was announced, and I immediately jumped onto it because it's also a pain point that I had in the past. And it's about cleaning up AMIs. And if you are worked on that problem before, you probably remember that there are two things to do. First is you have to deregister the AMI. And then second, don't forget the most important step, you have to delete the snapshots that were actually kind of backing up this AMI, because the AMI itself is actually nothing. So the thing that is also cost you money is the snapshots that are linked to the AMI. And before that, this was actually three API calls. It was deregistering the AMI. Then you have to look up the block device mappings of the AMI. So you have to describe the AMI to get the block device mappings. And in each block device mapping, you see the reference to the snapshot. And then you have to delete the snapshots. And most AMIs consist of one name and one snapshot, but there are cases where this could be more than one. So this was basically what you did. So describe the AMI, deregister it, and then delete the snapshots if there were more than one. It's not complicated, but it's actually a little bit more involved than just deleting an AMI. And what AWS announced is that they now have a flag when you deregister the image, which is called delete associated snapshots. And if you set that to true, they will just do it for you, which is great because it saves a lot of API calls. And I maintain a tool called the AWS AMI Cleaner, and which basically cleans up AMIs based on rules like how old they are. You can also make sure that they are not deleting the latest trees or the ones that are younger than a week, or they are in use by an auto-scaling group or anything like that. So a couple of rules, filter rules, to make sure that you're not deleting the wrong AMIs, but in essence, it just cleans AMIs in all regions and things like that. So I immediately change the code of our tool to make use of this new feature, and it just works, and it's much quicker now than before because we make significantly less AIM API calls. I mean, if you're cleaning up thousands of AMIs, which can happen in our case because we build AMIs in GitHub whenever we change the code, we copy them to all regions. I think it's now, is it already 30 regions? I don't know, but we copy them to all regions because we test in all regions our software, and then it really adds up very quickly. That's also why we pay actually quite a significant amount of money for AMIs in AWS. So we are very motivated to get rid of them as well. And that's why we maintain the tool as well. So this is really cool, a new improvement from AWS. And Andreas, it's not on our list, but this is just, I will talk about it because I will talk about it in the next show. And this is SQS Fair Queues. This is also a nice feature. Like for us as a customer, you send one additional piece of data when you send a message. And then AWS just makes sure that this removes a lot of problems that we have in our product as well. That, for example, if a BucketDB customer runs a scheduled scan job of a bucket, this can block all the real-time scans of new files for many hours, depending on how they use our product. And with this new feature that AWS introduced, the Fair Queue feature, we can make sure that the real-time jobs don't get stuck so that they are kind of worked on at the same pace than the full scans. So we had an item in our backlog for quite some time to challenge that problem. And we had thought about having two queues, one for high priority, one for low priority stuff and things like that, which was the approach that was recommended before. But now with Fair Queues, you can really have an identifier that kind of partitions your work. AWS calls it to partition between tenants. In our case, it's more between buckets and real-time and full scans, but it doesn't matter. So this is really cool feature, and I already added it to all our, like, it's in attachment V, it's in BucketDB. And I mean, this needs to be released, but it's already in the code base. It's really cool feature. I was very excited when I read this, and this also the same thing with the AMI deletion. So it's really, I mean, it's just one flag, but it's really, really nice. So
interesting. Yeah.
Exciting. This is kind of back in the old days of AWS. So when every day there was a new exciting stuff coming out. Now sometimes you see it. I mean, they are increasing. The time between is increasing, I think. But sometimes there's new stuff that's really good, yeah. That is usable. So it's really cool now.
Perfect.
Very Michael. Happy.
Okay. So I would say that's it, Michael. We'll be back soon. Subscribe to our newsletter, podcast, or YouTube channel to make sure you're not missing the upcoming show. And also, we're looking forward to your feedback, especially about the new format here. hello@cloudonow.io or find us on LinkedIn and Mastodon. As always, you will find all the links in the show notes or the video description. Thanks again. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for joining. Bye.
Bye.